TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Jerry Brown, Last Chance to Do the Right Thing.
I've seen too much killing, and not just on TV. Since 1976, over 1,400 women and men have been executed in our prisons. Some were later found to be innocent. In California, 743 people in cages on death row wait to die. 60% are people of color. 20 states where people are safe have no death penalty. Why do we? It's a dark time in America. Join me in asking Governor Brown to declare a moratorium on executions and commute all death sentences to life in prison. For a just, moral state, end the death penalty in California.
That's Mike Farrell, activist, humanitarian, actor, and author, president of Death Penalty Focus. He's appealing to Jerry Brown as Brown is getting ready to leave office at the end of December 2018. Death Penalty Focus is an abolition organization with an educational nonprofit status. I heard Mike Farrell's appeal on Tom Hartman's program on December 4 and got permission to quote from their conversation. Here's Mike Farrell.
Here in California, we have the largest death row in the nation. You know, the death penalty really brutalizes us all. It's racist in application. It costs a hell of a lot more money than does keeping people in prison for the rest of their lives, if necessary. And it entraps and kills innocent people. So it's simply a blot on everything that we believe this country is about. And more we've come to the understanding. We as a people are coming to the understanding that we really don't need this, and it's not serving us.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but of the OECD countries, the 34 developed countries in the world, I think we're the only one that still has a death penalty, aren't we?
Yes, that's right. As a matter of fact, in order to become a member of the European Union, you have to agree to give up the death penalty. Today, there are only about 35, I think, killing countries.
In the entire world?
In the world.
Yeah, it's remarkable. George Herbert Walker Bush having died this weekend and being buried on Wednesday, there's been a renewed conversation, particularly among communities of color, particularly in the African-American community, about how consequential Bush's decision in 1988 to use the Willie Horton ad in order to become president, how consequential that decision was, because in large part what it did is it caused the Democrats, specifically Bill Clinton, who became president 4 years later, to conclude that that in order to beat a Republican like Mike Dukakis had failed to do, you had to be, you know, tough as nails, quote, tough on crime. And right. That meant cracking down on people of color, cracking down on welfare for people of color, and, you know, beating your chest and roaring about, you know, the death penalty, which is mostly disproportionately applied to people of color. And that was the story in many regards of the Clinton presidency, you know, right through minimum mandatory sentences and all this kind of stuff. It seems to me that outside of the angry white echo chamber that exists in right-wing hate radio and Fox News, which is perhaps 20% of the American population, and Trump world. Outside of that, it seems like Americans left, right, and center are waking up to the obscenity of the death penalty. And do you agree with that analysis of that 88 election?
Oh, indeed. It wasn't the first, obviously. I mean, we've been doing this for years, but it was the most egregious in the modern era, I think. From that point, the death penalty used to be what was known as the third rail of Democratic politics. You just couldn't touch it. You couldn't say that you didn't like it. You couldn't say that you opposed it. You really had to be, as you suggest, tough on crime and killing all the people. And Clinton went down to Arkansas and presided over the execution of Ricky Ray Rector, a brain-damaged man who didn't know that he was actually being executed and left the dessert for his last meal in the cell from which he was taken for when he returned.
Wow.
In the last 10 years, we have now had 10 states, Washington State being the most recent, give up the death penalty, some through legislative action, some through gubernatorial action, and always with the result being that instead of the crime rate rising, as people suggest, number of murders rising, it's been just the reverse. and the savings in money, and I hate to put a dollar and cents a tag on the issue of life, but in terms of the expenditure of tax money, wasting it on killing people and maintaining the kind of systems that do such harm, not only to the people that are executed, but to the people who are doing the executing, the people who we deputize to take lives in our name and suffer for it.
Yeah. What can we do about this? We're talking with Mike Farrell, the actor, activist, humanitarian, author, and president of Death Penalty Focus. Deathpenalty.org is the website. DP Focus is the Twitter handle. What do I do?
Well, one thing they can do is contact Governor Brown. Jerry Brown, we all know, philosophically opposes the death penalty. For some reason, he has refused to stand up on the issue since he's been in office this second time. He didn't support either of our initiatives in 2012 or 2016 to do away with the death penalty. He didn't oppose it, but he didn't support it, which right. would have been all the difference. But what he can do now in the next weeks, he's going to remain in office, is a number of things. He can simply declare a moratorium on death, say it is wrong, and begin the process of commuting sentences of death to sentences of life.
This would be a legacy builder.
Absolutely. I think it would be something that would accrue to his place in history in an extraordinary way because, as I said before, California has we have 743 women and men on our death row in California.
Wow.
That's almost 25% of the entire country's death row. And if he were to end that, it would elevate him in the status in every way you can think of.
Right.
But it would also begin a process that I think is inexorable. It's happening anyway. Oregon probably will be next. Kansas is looking at it. There are so many of these states that have come to realize it serves them not at all. But I think Brown's action really could be the coup de grace, if you will,
right.
to this awful policy.
Thanks to Louise and Tom Hartman for permission to use clips from Tom's conversation with Mike Farrell. I explained to the Hartmans that I had a rare recording of Jerry Brown from 1998 when he was presenting himself as a recovering politician, and that I wanted to run it alongside the appeal to remove California from the list of killing states. You will hear in a moment how insightful, even prescient, Jerry Brown's analysis of politics was in 1998. But it was astounding that he even chided his own father, Pat Brown, when he used being tough on crime to get elected in 1943. Jerry Brown.
You're supposed to talk about potholes and crime and education, which are all important, but they're a mantra of meaninglessness because they never change. It's just more of the lie. I know when I say my father lied because he didn't, well, you judge. But anyway, in his first campaign in 1943, when he ran for district attorney, I was five then, the slogan was, crack down on crime, pick Brown this time. So I figured my campaign slogan, it's already written. They're all the same. So what we need here is not rhetoric, we need is action.
Brown spoke to organic farmers at the annual EcoFarm conference in Asilomar, California, on January 21st, 1998. When I ran the full talk on KALW later that year, I got a call from a reporter at the Oakland Tribune. He had just attended a Jerry Brown campaign rally for mayor of Oakland, a job Brown ended up holding from 1999 to 2007. On his way home, the reporter listened to my program and said that he was astounded by the difference in Brown's tone and content at the rally. In a matter of a few months, Brown had made his father's mantra of meaninglessness his own and were now on a tough-on-crime platform. After holding political office from 1999 to 2018 as mayor and attorney general of California, ending on a third and fourth term as governor of California, Jerry Brown has termed and timed out of politics and has an opportunity to take action on principles he clearly once held. He is part of Jerry Brown's keynote to organic farmers in January 1998. It then earned him a standing ovation.
People told me to come down here and tell you all to go to vote, but I wouldn't know who I should tell you to go to vote for. Because the way this thing is organized, the important stuff is never talked about. And the little peccadilloes are raised to the level of national crisis. And that is not without malice. Because the real fundamental issue is there's a premise here. And that premise doesn't work. And it's the guiding premise on which contemporary politics operates. It was probably best stated by President Truman in 1949 when he declared the decade of development. And at that point, he enshrined the notion in its most formal statement that America was developed and all these other countries in the world were undeveloped. And so it was our mission, since we won in World War II, now we had another mission, and that was to go develop all these underdeveloped people, which was the vast majority of mankind. Now, it just so happens that most of mankind didn't know they were underdeveloped until they had been so designated. And this is a very old story. The Greeks had a term for anyone who didn't speak Attic Greek. It was called barbaros, barbarian. And the Christians came along, and if you weren't a Christian, you were a pagan. And then after a while, they developed other concepts like infidels to distinguish from Christians. And then at the Enlightenment, and then Europe got civilized, humanized, progressivized, and they started to go out and discover the native. They didn't have natives until about 500 years ago. They got the idea of natives. And then there's us, and there's them. And therefore, 70 million people had to die because they were natives. And they had to be converted, and they had to be brought up to the standards of civilization. In fact, this thing goes into more recent times. Woodrow Wilson said something in regard to Mexico, and actually just a lot of these countries, I think Mexico was one of them, that we had to teach them, we being the Americans, had to teach them order and discipline. That kind of will ring rather hollow, at least around the White House and other places. This idea of development is the idea that we got it, we're on the right track, but as soon as they get more of it, then they'll feel good and we'll all feel good and we'll all have peace. That, in kind of a short version, is the reigning doctrine. And what it's really about is that, well, it takes 200 million cars to move 260 million Americans, and that means if you want to move the Chinese in similar style, it'll take a billion cars. And then you do figure out for the Indians and then a few more, and you have the need for at least five more planets, which are not available. If the Chinese, now that they're so big and powerful, if they dared to adapt the taste, the eating taste, in terms of fish, of their neighbors, the Japanese, do you know how many fish that would take every year? If they just ate the same amount of fish as the Japanese, all the people in China, it would take all the fish that the sea can produce, about 100 million tons. Unthinkable. And if you look at each of these items, these indices of progress and advancement and civilization, and you generalize them without any changes, the whole thing collapses. And so the notion that development, and you hear that, you got to develop them. First, that now that they're through with communism, you got to develop them. Well, the concept of development itself is exhausted. It's at its outer limit. Now, it may take, I don't know how many years or decades to sputter out. It may take a few centuries. But as a galvanizing, organizing idea, it leaves a lot to be desired. And I believe that this notion that many people grew up in, that we've got it, it's the American way, and we just take it to the rest of the world, and then everything's going to be fine someday. Well, since Truman proposed the development decade in 1949, the gap between the rich and the poor has doubled. In fact, between 60 and 90, the gap between the rich and the poor has increased. The gap at home is increasing between the very wealthy and the very poor. And you have a tremendous amount of anxiety because there's very little that you can really hold on to, because the driving force in everything now is this market concept, which is the return on investment. And when you start applying that to everything, it doesn't give you a lot to hold on to. In fact, it's never been done before. Every civilization until probably 100, 200 years ago always had a very large part of their culture and their society anchored in some non-market principle. Religion, custom, ancestor worship, taboos, a grove. There were spaces, there were practices that were not subject to buy and sell, to fluctuating incentives and prices. Today, that space is diminishing almost to the point of disappearance. And that's the world in which we live. So when we look at anything, it's always within that guise. And that's the battle, whether it's for organic agriculture, for sustainability, to preserve a neighborhood, to preserve the last 4% of redwood groves in this state. It's up against the most powerful religious idea that is extended further and deeper than any idea in the history of the world. And that is this idea of modernity, progress, buy and sell. For example, if you look at a tree, if it's around for 1,000 years, you could either call it a wasting asset, as Charles Hurwitz saw it, or you can see it as, there it is, and there's the habitat, and let's look at it, let's appreciate it. Awe, you know, just how do you incorporate that into an efficiency development model? It doesn't fit. And that's why Hurwitz acted rationally when he leveraged Pacific Lumber and started and doubled the cut, because decks and wet bars can be measured. They go into the gross national product. A tree or a grove or a bird or a fish isn't in the gross national product. It's not measured. And today, everything is into the measure. Measure is very important. The time, the value, the quantity. That's the powerful idea. And that's why this whole notion, if you take the market and you add it to technology, you get ships that can go out to sea for 6 months, that have nets that stretch for miles, that are in contact with satellites and sonar technology and refrigeration capacity. I mean, they just go, and the fewer the fish, the higher the price, so the quicker you take what's ever left. So it's a mad psychology, and yet it is the reigning doctrine. So what's happening is we have an ideology that's so pervasive, it's so embedded into the conventional political game, that to get into that game is to accept mass brainwashing. It's to enter into a kind of hope that is hopeless, because you just sink into it and you start saying, well, is Gore going to be better than Clinton? And is Gray Davis going to be better than Feinstein? And is this going to be better than that? Well, there are differences. Yes, there are very fine differences that I could articulate for you. But if you stand back and you ask about the issues that really count, about what is, you know, what is happening in the inner city, what's happening to our health? Has the war on cancer with its $30 billion, has it reduced the mortality? No. Caused by cancer in 1962, since accurate records, age-adjusted, have been kept, has not been, no reduction in mortality, none. When somebody writes a story, writes a wonderful book about it, it's reviewed in the New England Journal of Medicine by W.R. Grace, toxicologist, one of the biggest chemical companies around. And he pans it, called it paranoia, Environmentalists are paranoid. Well, that got a little exposed. But there are these fundamental issues of how human beings can be in harmony with nature. What's the wisdom that we can pick up from our ancestors? What differences exist in the world, and can we understand that? Can we really grasp the hypocrisy when even a Pete Wilson wouldn't tolerate drilling off the Monterey coast? But all of us use the gasoline from Exxon, which in part is going to come from places in Ecuador where people have lived a certain way for hundreds of years and their life will be wiped out, all for progress. You can't leave oil in the ground. It's there. You got to grab it. It's like you have to go get the gold and the mineral out of the Black Hills. There is no principle of restraint in the present order of things. In the development era, development is the good. And anything that goes against it is Luddite, cuckoo, strange, and sometimes they would call it moonbeam. I've had run into that one. They'll pull anything out. That's if you buy into that. And I'm really telling you tonight, buy out of it. And that's what organic farming is all about. It's buying out of a corrupt system that's dangerous, that's lethal, and it's killing the planet. So when people say, well, as long as we get our label, we'll take a little irradiation. I say, no irradiation, until you can tell me all the, you know, why do you need irradiation? How about a little toxic sludge? Put that in the garden. Get it right out of there from the swamps of the South Bronx. That'll go good. Just ship it over to Texas and grow some good organic tomatoes and sell them in the farmer's market on Sunday morning. I mean, come on. You're not going to go for that, are you? And what's the other one? Oh, yeah, these genetic, whatever they call it. They got stuff now where they're actually bringing rats out of cows. They didn't quite make it yet. But there was the, miscarriage. But they're trying it. And here's the thing that's so amazing. All that this great, rotten political system can come up with in response when they say human cloning, we better study it. We better take a 10-year moratorium on that one. Why don't we have a 10-year moratorium on slavery? Can we just hold it off for 10 years? Then we can check it out. See, no moral base. There's nothing human here. It's an out-of-control paradigm. It's a model of madness that is now masquerading as common sense. It's only people who would come to this conference who can see that. And you got to tell everybody because they don't get it. They're really wondering, did Clinton do it or not? And they're going to spend the next 6 months thinking about that while they're eating a bunch of poison that's been irradiated with toxic sludge added on top with a little genetic manipulation on the side. See, the game of economics is infinite desires. And what is produced more efficiently even than the stuff and the services is the desires for the stuff. So along with everything that's made and produced and sold and propagandized is this creation of more and more human desires from us to the people in India to all over the planet. And that's called progress. So there's where we are. And you join here, you come together to talk about one aspect of this big picture, a world with a completely bankrupt idea. There is the knowledge and there is the clarity to live in a way that makes sense and that you yourself know. And by demonstrating that and by exemplifying it and by learning more about it and by sharing it, who knows what the impact will be? But that has power. Truth has power. Truth has power in the age of the lie. And we are in the age of the lie. This is the context of organic agriculture. It is a philosophy. It's a way of life. It's an insight. It's a total commitment. And this is what the world needs. This is what other people need. This is what all of us need to understand how we can live in ways that make sense and that are respectful of the other and the other person, the other way of life, the other species, the other expressions of this incredible complexity called reality. I am responding not by being on a farm, but by being in the city. And while that is viewed very weirdly, you're supposed to talk about potholes and crime and education, which are all important, but they're a mantra of meaninglessness because they never change. They never change. It's just more of the lie. I know when I say my father lied because he didn't, well, you judge. But anyway, in his first campaign in 1943, when he ran for district attorney, I was five then, my first campaign, the slogan was, crack down on crime, pick brown this time. So I figured my campaign slogan, it's already written. They're all the same. So what we need here is not rhetoric, we need is action. We need actual things going on, stuff coming out of the ground, people doing things, people standing up for what they know. And then these other things, the common sense, the beauty of it, the power, will then begin to put other things in line. If we can link the cities with farmers, community-supported agriculture, if we can get it into the schools, if we can get this, I don't know, no-school schools or something where things really happen, where you grow things, you learn about biology and natural history and how to make things, how to use your hands as well as your head, as well as the television and the computer, then we're going to get somewhere. So that's the context. And so it's a very exciting moment. Don't have hope in what you hear, read, or see, but what you know, taste, and feel, and grow. And together, we'll change something. Thank you very much.
That was part of Jerry Braun's keynote to organic farmers on January 21st, 1998, while he was still a recovering politician. Soon he fell off the wagon, adopted a tough-on-crime policy, and had a second, almost two-decade-long career as mayor, attorney general, and governor in California. He was presiding over a killing state with the largest population of inmates on death row in the country. Here again is the appeal by Death Penalty Focus to set that right before he leaves office.
In California, 743 people in cages on death row wait to die. 60% are people of color. 20 states where people are safe have no death penalty. Why do we? Join me in asking Governor Brown to declare a moratorium on executions and commute all death sentences to life in prison. For a just, moral state, end the death penalty in California.
That's the appeal by deathpenalty.org with a link to the petition. Thanks to the Tom Hartman Program for allowing me to quote from Tom's interview with Mike Farrell, president of deathpenalty.org. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.